Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vookcast episode number 93. We did tease what this episode would be about in the last episode we did a critique, and just in case you haven't worked it out yet, we'll give you a very big hint.
Welcome to the sun-drenched tropical paradise of Isle Delfino. We're so pleased to welcome you to our beautiful home.
But yes, that's right. The game that we will be doing an in-depth like critique of next is Super Mario Sunshine. So we had a few fans comment on our Facebook to say they wanted that done. It was coincidence that that was the game we picked next. So yeah, those people especially will be happy. To start off with, I guess we'll just go into the introduction for the game itself, because, you know, it had a pretty... I like to think it had a smooth development cycle, like it wasn't scrapped or redone or anything like that. Basically, Nintendo finished up Super Mario 64, and then they started working on a sequel shortly after. They planned to utilise the 64DD, which was, you know, the disk drive that kind of never took off, ever. And they wanted there to be some kind of cooperative play with Luigi, and Nintendo eventually scrapped development and decided just to move to the GameCube because, you know, it was probably getting to the end of their generation. Following that, Nintendo kind of did up a quick tech demo set in the Mario universe, Peach's Castle, which allowed developers to demonstrate the capabilities of the GameCube and let them walk through a graphically updated version of the castle from Super Mario 64. I'm not sure if this was released to the public. Do you guys remember reading about it or anything? Because I think this might have fueled speculation that it would just be another game in Peach's Castle.
I don't remember the Peach's Castle.
Well, I mean, the Peach's Castle demo is apparently, if you have the means, you can download an ISO of that disc and play it. I mean, I don't think it would be that interesting, but it is out there. And then in 2000 at Space World, Nintendo presented Super Mario 128 to the public. It was more of a tech demo of sorts that kind of displayed all the kinds of new technology that the GameCube could do. But then it got kind of... It disappeared after that, and, you know, the idea of rapidly generating all those characters was rolled into Pikmin as a game, and the idea of walking around spheres and manipulating gravity was implemented into Twilight Princess, and then made into a full-on game with Super Mario Galaxy. So all those things were cut. They weren't
Hang on,
lost,
what?
But they were,
sorry,
know, repurposed.
Twilight
eventually.
Princess, what's manipulating spheres and gravity in that? Oh, the
that
boots.
Dungeon. There's a...
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well...
Insert soundbite here.
Next thing you know, you'll tell me the bushes from Mario Brothers are clouds.
So, in E3 2001, a whole year later, Nintendo accidentally puts up three Mario games on their site. Super Mario Sunshine, Mario 128, and Marionette, or Marionette. Marionette itself was never actually shown to the public, and we're not sure if it was ever a Mario game, but Miyamoto said that he thought it could work really good with the Wii, because, you know, you control a puppet. But they couldn't find a way to make it, and eventually it was shelved, and we never saw it again. In the same year, yeah, Sony stole it and made it Puppeteer. I don't think that's what happened, but yeah. In the same year, Nintendo officially announced Super Mario Sunshine at Space World 2001, I believe, and Shigeru Miyamoto presented a trailer for the game showing Mario running around the island, and it was the first time the public ever saw the game, and it was debuted at the same time as Wind Waker, so... I guess
probably
at the
didn't
time,
get noticed because everyone was jumping up and down screaming at Zelda.
Yeah, for sure. I guess that, you know, Wind Waker was a huge deal back then, and you know, it kind of might have had a one of two effects. Like, people would have really looked upon Mario favorably because it wasn't a Wind Waker-esque reinvention. Little did people know it almost kind of was. Or they could have hated it, like, because, you know, Nintendo had shown two games to the public that were very different to the last iteration. A year later, at E3 2002, Nintendo showed off a new trailer, and it kind of changed the plaza or the island to a more tropical-looking setting. The one in the original trailer was very urban. It was very, like, you know, kind of taller buildings, and it was less beachy. And the game was much more colourful, polished, had those shaders in place that really gave it that look that, you know, kind of hasn't replicated in another Mario game. And then it was finally released that year to players in 2002. We had to wait until October 2002 for the game to come out. If you consider, like, I think the first thing that I thought we should talk about was kind of, the game was already in a difficult spot, I think. I mean, I don't know if you guys agree.
How so?
Because, you know, it was kind of... I think, first of all, every single Nintendo console up until this point has launched with a Mario game, and this was the one... I mean, I don't know if this is how people were thinking, but you would kind of think if it wasn't launching with one, maybe that it was kind of like, it must be really good, you know, they're working on it, they don't want it for launch.
I don't know.
So people had to wait for it. That's the first point. And the second point was it was coming after Super Mario 64, which in itself was, you know, quite a big deal for platforming games and 3D back then.
Well, not just that. I mean, it's also, it came out, I mean, Mario 64 sort of really started, well, it did. It started the 3D platformer sort of movement. And then after that, you had Banjo-Kazooie, you had Donkey Kong 64, and all these other sort of 3D platformers that really sort of expanded upon what Mario 64 had done. Getting back to the first console launch, I think maybe that's just because they wanted... I don't know, maybe they just knew it wasn't going to be ready for launch, so they went with, like, Luigi and Pikmin instead. I don't know what happened.
I mean, I suppose Luigi is kind of close, but Pikmin, I think, would have been one of those draw cards. You know, no one really knew what it was.
I do think, where you were mentioning before, that it kind of started off at maybe a bit of a disadvantage, because, as you say, it wasn't the launch title that people wanted, and then when it came out, it wasn't exactly Super Mario 64 2 that people kind of wanted, just like this weird abstract playground. It was tropical, and he went to an island, and there were cutscenes, and everything was so weird and different that I think it caught a few people off guard and might not have been as popular as it could have been because of that.
Mm. It's basically the only... I just put this down as, like, in my notes, it's kind of like a weird fact. It's the only 3D Mario game that Nintendo hasn't really done a follow-up to. Like, we've had Super Mario 64 on the DS, Galaxy 2, 3D World. So maybe they just... they're really put off by revisiting this location.
I mean, this is sort of why we're doing it. I mean, I'm pretty sure it did get a negative reception at the time. Like, not... I mean, it got a good, you know, it probably fell a bit into the Zelda cycle. It's like after the...
a bit of a good but not great
reception.
Yeah,
it's not...
I mean, it was considered,
know, oh,
like,
this
a
is
critical
a great game,
commercial
but
success.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But because it sold 5.5 million copies as well, which is quite good for... I mean, I don't know.
For its time.
Yeah.
For a GameCube game, I mean, that's basically just under one quarter of all GameCube owners buying it. And I mean, it's sort of... I mean, it is... It's one they haven't revisited, and it sort of sticks out a lot. Like, all the other Mario games, I mean, they have the Mario story. It's like Bowser kidnaps Peach and let's go chase him through these 8 castles. Whereas this is sort of set in a world that stuff keeps changing in it and developing.
Yeah, and that will lead us on to the first section we'll talk about, which is the story itself. The basic story, for anyone who doesn't know, is Mario and Princess Peach and her, you know, her entourage of toads go on a vacation to Isle Delfino. They find that the island itself is drenched and, like, polluted with paint and sludge and stuff, and Mario meets Flood, which is basically a cleaning device that shoots water.
Fee!
Mario is
such a better companion than Fee.
Mario
we will
get into that, I promise. Mario is framed for the mess and is tasked by the authorities to clean up Isle Delfino because there is actually a Shadow Mario guy running around who looks just like Mario and has basically framed him for it. The interesting thing about the story to me was that it kind of it's the first time to me that a Mario game kind of had a story beyond the regular...
beyond stuff that was just, like, explained in a manual or in,
Bowser's
like, a single
Peach
screen.
I mean, was there even a storyline for 64? I can't remember that being anything being said.
I've baked a cake for you.
You go to the castle. And I mean, I can't... may have been a slight cutscene or something. But I mean, other than Super Mario RPG, I don't think any of them really had a story.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I didn't pay too much attention to the marketing and stuff, but did they reveal who Shadow Mario was in the marketing?
I don't think they did.
Because that, to me, was like, I played it the second time for this episode, and I actually forgot it was Baby Bowser.
Really?
I don't know how I forgot either.
Because this is the game where Baby Bowser Jr. sort of debuted. Oh, was he?
Nah. Isn't he in Yoshi's Island?
Yes.
Or was that Bowser?
It was the first...
Yeah, well, I don't... It doesn't really matter. But,
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... I mean, I suppose we can talk about Shadow Mario as a villain and Baby Bowser as a villain now.
Bowser Jr.
The small Bowser. I mean, I thought it was sort of just on the Shadow Mario. I thought it was really weird that... are these Piantas colorblind? Like, they see this big blue watery thing that has a moustache. Oh, it must be Mario. Let's put him in prison.
I kind of wonder when they do stuff like this. Like, are we meant to assume that he looks the same and just to make it easy for us, they've made him look like that? But then that's...
well, that maybe
that's,
they...
but that kind of highlights...
maybe they only saw the sketches and that was all that they based Mario's accusations on. It seems so weird, but you know, it didn't really matter.
The people of Pianta, Delfino Isle, sorry, are pretty dumb, though.
Oh, like, God, yes.
I mean, at they kind the of beginning, and you know, sit through that atrocious cutscene. And it kind of annoys me. This is what I wrote this in my notes as well. That, you know, they're kind of marketing this place to be this amazing, nice tropical getaway, but then as soon as you get there, you're presumed guilty of a crime just based on some shitty drawing that someone made.
Maybe this has some like real world parallels in current world issues.
It's actually a deep and moving commentary on
Mario is
the justice system. But yeah, like I don't know, that kind of annoyed me. But I kind of felt like, especially with like the Shadow Mario reveal, that it was kind of happened a little bit early. Like I thought they could have really played on that a little bit more. But I don't know if you guys agree
it happened.
Or not.
I found that out in like my first play session. Like it was an hour or probably about 2 or 3 hours I played, and so he sure is Baby Bowser. That revelation.
Yeah, and then like, as soon as he kind of becomes Baby Bowser, he becomes less intimidating, kind of like.
On that revelation, it was really, really cool that he mentioned that he got it from some weird doctor, and you see that it's got
the logo on
Egad's
it.
Face icon on it. It was like, oh, this really cool, you know, reference back to Luigi's
and
Mansion
so does
and
Flood
the fact that
as well.
All in the same universe.
They were sort of pushing Egad a bit back then. I mean, he also popped up in Superstar Saga as like he was on providing all these items. So I don't know what the go with that was. Like maybe they were just trying to introduce a new character. Mario series. And I think
he's still around today, which is kind of cool, in Mansion 2.
Yeah, but that's about it.
The ones that have come out since have been very straight up basic platformers without any sort of outside story.
Yeah, I mean, especially this period, I mean, I don't know, I mean, we might get to it later, like they were taking a lot of influences from what was going on with 3D platformers at the time, and we need a big storyline, like going back to Banjo-Kazooie, they had the whole thing with Gruntilda and all this sort of stuff going on.
Or like Jak and Daxter and all these platformers all had to have some major world-ending story to give you a reason to jump and collect shiny things.
Whereas now they've gone Galaxy, we don't need a story, let's just explore.
Or to an even greater extent, 3D World, it's just like, got to get to the end of the level. Yeah.
There's actually an article on the internet that says that this story is actually meant to be interpreted as like a deep examination of the relationship between a single father and his son in Bowser and Baby Bowser, but I might have been taking it a little bit too seriously. But then at the same time, Baby Bowser is solely motivated by trying to find his mum. And I mean, let's be real, if I was looking at Bowser, I'd be like, who would he be with to have... We've never seen that, so...
And then in the revelation, they mention that he's like, Peach is my mum, and that was... a terrible way to make people's minds go crazy.
Peach is there, is like, Mama? What? And it's like, just stop talking.
Peach is so dumb in this game, by the way. It's so embarrassing. Like,
There's a bit at the end with Bowser and Bowser Jr. are walking off after being beaten by Mario. And Bowser's like, son, I need to tell you, Peach isn't your mother. And he's like, I know. And it's just...
He was just desperately chasing after the idea of a mother.
Oh.
Such a sad story.
Even at the beginning
when the shine sprite comes on screen, she literally behaves like a 2-year-old, like, you know.
That's pretty much her character. She's just like a child in an adult's body.
I mean, really? let's not get into the whole sovereign reign of the Mushroom Kingdom, because, no way that place should be able to exist with that kind of a monarch.
But I mean, I think that we can agree. I don't know, did you guys think the story helped it or hindered it?
I really, really liked that it gave the game a consistent setting. I really loved that you were going to a place and the entire world was... one place. It wasn't just a level that's completely chopped off from everywhere else, but I'm not sure they needed to explain so much of the story. Like, I don't think I got anything from any of the cutscenes. It was, I just liked the establishment of a setting more than anything else.
I mean, I was something I've really liked about, just sort of going back to with Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, is you have this consistent setting where all these levels take place. It's not just, this is a fire world, this is an ice world, whereas here everything's on an island. Everything sort of fits in with that theme. And, I mean, a lot of Mario games don't have a theme. It's just random levels after random levels, which is okay, but if that's all you're getting, it's a bit too much. Whereas this, you've got a consistent tropical theme, and it makes it a bit more interesting.
And I think that the consistent theme, we'll get into it a bit more in the game design, but it really allowed the levels to be themed around the new mechanics of the game, which, you know, it really adds a lot to it.
Which leads us into game design, which is the first major section besides story. So we'll talk about structure in terms of, you know, the game world itself and the objectives themselves. I think we'd all agree it's pretty similar to Mario 64 in terms of structure.
Oh, no doubt.
Like, you know, you go into an area, you've got the different episodes, and each of the episodes has a different objective, and each episode might change the world a little bit accordingly.
And even the very first level I found super, super reminiscent of Bob on Battlefield in 64. It sort of had that same, you know, you've got that early area where you can practice your jumping and your new mechanics, and then had a big mountain to climb with the boss at the top. It didn't strike me until I played it recently.
And it's even got stuff rolling around down the side of it.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's obviously a very different level, but it's got a lot of the same hallmarks to it. It's, an established introduction style of level.
The biggest thing that I really want to talk about in this structure, which is where I think a lot of the hate for Sunshine might stem from, is that there isn't really a lot of, like, in terms of levels and objective variety, it's quite, like, there's not as much compared to Mario 64, which came before it. To give context, in Super Mario 64, there were 15 worlds, and there were 6 objectives in each of those worlds. And each of those worlds, we could argue, are much more varied than in Sunshine. And then, to go forward, Galaxy features roughly about 15 main levels, with between 1 and 3 stars per level. Galaxy 2 has about 49 levels with about 1 and 3 stars per level. To be fair, Galaxy, some of those worlds are very anemic in terms of content, but compare them to Super Mario Sunshine, which only has 7 levels with 8 shine sprites per level, it's just not as much. And
but those levels
some,
are so
some levels
big.
Even have... Yeah, they... I don't know if I agree. Maybe they are, but, I mean, some of the levels have 2 red coin-based shines. And that's just so unnecessary to me. But
and you mentioned it in the notes, but the blue coins as well. Like, there'll be so many of those. Spray one graffiti and a blue coin will come out the other side of the level, then do it again. It just sort of repeated a lot of the ideas over and over in each level.
I mean, and, like, touching on that, the objectives, like the Shadow Mario chase scenes, I really enjoyed them because, you know, they kind of encouraged you to use your triggers properly, the way they're meant to be used. Like, you know, pressing them a little bit or heaps or whatever. The annoying thing is they kind of repeat themselves once again, and you have to do them to finish the game. So it's not like my idea of some games is like, if there's an optional content, it's okay to be repetitive, kind of, because, you know, it's optional. But if you're forcing the player through all this stuff that is repetitive, it's kind of not that great.
Like, I thought some of those weren't too bad. Like, the second one in particular, it sort of, you saw that the Shadow Mario did the wall jumps, and so you know, if you didn't know already, you'd learn that you can do the wall jumps, and that had some value there, but then it does it again and again, and there's a little, it doesn't teach you as much in the continuing ones.
The interesting thing, the last thing I just want to say quickly about game mods, which is like kind of like a random thing that I noticed, was in one of the levels, you know, levels where Shadow Mario takes your flood, and you're on those places with the wood planks that are rotating and they've got the shit jutting out of them. Do you guys remember
that?
Yeah,
the stuff with the scat music.
The coloured, yeah. Those areas are like one-to-one copied in Super Mario Galaxy later on, which I thought was really strange, but that's
comment. I mean, because I remember a lot of the sort of post-release criticism about the game was, oh, the levels are a bit much, but hey, those secret levels, they're kind of cool. You should do that, because that's basically what a 2D Mario would be like in 3D.
But and I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's where the inspiration for Galaxy came from. It's just the positive reception to those levels.
I would get more of a 3D land or 3D world vibe from those levels, to be honest. But anyway,
I think those levels, they sort of served a really interesting purpose to kind of... They pointed at how much Flood really did change the gameplay itself. It sort of got rid of those crutches you could rely on, the jetpack and everything like that. And it just suddenly made things so much harder as a result.
Yeah, which leads us into the next part, Flood and the platforming itself. So, I mean, you don't have to be a thinking person to know that Flood is really what sets Mario Sunshine apart from the other games. I think Flood works well. I I was surprised to find, because I mean, this is the thing, when I played games back then, I was in a vacuum, you know, like, I didn't really know what other people were thinking or whatever. But yeah.
Except for people that wrote into magazines.
Yeah, yeah, like letters or what was that column? Mr. Badass in Nintendo 64.
Oh
game.
My god.
Skulls, yes. Skulls and Fat Boy.
But I think that, you know, Flood is a kind of really. I think it's a well designed thing that they kind of came
you know,
up with. Like,
you know, I mean. Sorry.
I loved it.
It well, kind I'm... of, like, you know, lets you go. And they, I feel like they do this a lot in Sunshine, especially in some of the later levels. You kind of, it lets you go to like high altitudes for your platforming and stuff safely, like without frustration.
It's sort of...
And it means that if you do screw up a little bit, you've got that safety net that you won't have to start all over again. You might be able to save yourself.
You know what it reminds me a lot of? The Tanuki suit in 3D Land. Because, I mean, remember back when it came out, I'm like, oh, that's just a gimmick. It's not a real Mario game. And then, especially playing it now, I'm like, no, it's just basically a raccoon tail or this little sort of power. Hmm. Instead of being able to lose it, you've got it all the time. You've got your projectile attack. You've got your hover thing that'll let you go further. And it's basically just, instead of having to hunt down these items, you've got it with you all the time.
You just have them.
Yeah, and
yeah,
just...
I mean, most Mario games are kind of defined by their signature power-up. Like, you got the raccoon tail in 3, the cape in Mario World, and Flood was really the one for this game. And the fact that they let you have it all the time, unless the water ran out.
All those, like, special levels.
It, yeah, all those special levels, which just pointed out how much it really changed the way you played it. It's I really like the Flood idea.
The other thing I really like about Flood is it's not just, you know, helping you to jumping. It sort of lets you break the game a bit, because there's some, you know, there's just a lot of experimentation you can do with it. And, like, you can see a ledge up there and you're like, oh, I can't get up there. But if I sort of backflip onto that wall and then wall kick off that, and then when I'm at the absolute height of my jump, I use Flood to hover. And it's just all these little sort of, what's the word called?
But I love that. I don't think that's really breaking the game. It's just like encouraging experimentation.
Yeah,
and if they hit a blue coin up there, even better, like just something to reward people
for going
to the limits.
I mean, I'm sure there's some places that they don't intend you to get to early on in the game that you can get to. You just sort of need to figure out how. And I just
that's really good. That means that if you're coming back on a second play, then it's like, well, you can do this because you're not a new player. And if you're a new player, you probably wouldn't have found it anyway.
Hey, did anyone else sort
of
pick
up on the...
Would you
say Metroid games are broken then?
No. Well, I mean, a lot...
Yeah, it's kind of similar.
Yeah. Did anyone else
I can see your comparison.
The whole... Because I only just realised it while I was playing it recently. If you jump and then you spin the analog stick around, Mario will do like a spin in midair, which will make him descend slower.
Mm,
yeah, it's kind of like his Smash Bros. Move.
Yeah, but I never noticed that before, and I'm like, wow, where did, you know, all these little, I mean, just the
little nuances to platforming.
Well, I've got to be honest here, I totally forgot that there was that kind of that flexibility that in Mario, like you could jump from wall to wall, you could run back quickly, quickly change direction and do a bigger jump, you know, that stuff, kind of stuff.
I relied on that. That move, I relied completely on. Like,
it's very parkour is a thing.
The fact that I relied on that, you know, you turn around and do a higher jump move, that reminds me that they took out the like, duck and the slide jump. You know how you could do a duck, then jump, and you do a long jump? I assume the Flood must have replaced it, but I really missed it.
Do you guys think that making water, like, something that can run out, a bad thing or a good thing? Like, I felt like I never really ran out of it, so it felt like a kind of pointless meter to have in the game.
I had a few times where I ran out, and it's frustrating. Go, oh, I have to go. I've spent all this time trying to get up the top, and now I've run out of water, so I'm gonna go all the way.
So you've got, yeah.
But then I
feel the same. It rarely felt like when it ran out that it was something, you know, your fault or that it made sense for the game. It just kind of seemed to break the flow a little bit. If you're, you know, getting somewhere, you might have used a little bit more water than you like to, but then, oh, I've got to start again and be more efficient. It kind of breaks the flow a tad.
It's a funny sort of line you have to draw. It's like, do you just give the player unlimited like lives or magic just to experiment and go wild, or do you put these limitations on them so they know they have to sort of think ahead?
It kind of, and then that's what I wanted to talk about with Flood, is the game is really built around him.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that this is why I'm surprised that you guys enjoyed those other levels. The levels where Shadow Mario takes away Flood, it really highlighted to me how much I was relying on Flood, like, during...
Oh, for sure, for sure.
But, and because of that, I mean, I know that, you know, you kind of want to... I always complain about how easy the Mario games are. But these just felt unfairly hard, but I don't know if you guys agree or not. Because, you know, I was so used to using the hover nozzle and stuff. In those areas especially, I really struggled.
I think it seems unfairly hard because you really have to get into a different mindset of just, I don't have flood and I have to do pixel perfect platforming again. And it is kind of difficult to go between those two states of mind.
My only issue with those is, I mean, I think because you do get used to flood as this sort of safety net for if you've jumped too far, you can say, well, flood, I'll just sort of hover back a bit, hopefully I'll make it. My issue with those more comes from the camera, because it can be a bit all over the place and make it hard to judge your jumps. And I mean, that's just a problem with, especially 3D platformers back then, was just having a camera that works perfectly. Even now, it's very rare that you'll see a camera that doesn't try and kill you half the time.
The other thing I thought that was really weird with Flood, I don't know if you guys agree with me as well, is the nozzle. Flood has these different nozzles, right? So like the rocket and the fan.
Or the jet ski one.
Yeah.
Sonic the Hedgehog mode.
They were kind of cool, but like I kind of thought it was weird how the game... I mean, when was the first time you guys found one of those power-ups?
Do you guys remember? But it was within a level. I think it was in the Rico Harbor, and I got that rocket. Where it was in, I think, the third mission in.
And what about you, Flame?
I mean, I can't remember back when I played it 10 years ago. Not of old. But when I was playing it this time, I was going through the first level. It was like my sixth playthrough on that.
So what my point is it's very... I find it so bizarre that these power-ups are introduced with little to no explanation, and they're kind of... Like, it's not like... In most video games and stuff, you know, you get a power-up, it's kind of introduced to you somehow, like through a cutscene, which is not usual for a Mario game, but in a game like this where it's so centric on cutscenes and stuff...
Even Mario, like, they'll introduce a new gameplay element and then have the level designed around using that and showing you how to use it.
But these, to me, were just very, just thrown in. And it was really bizarre.
Use that.
And especially considering Flood is meant to be this thing that Mario has just picked up. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't really know how to use it. I would have thought there'd be a little bit more to it than these things. Like, I kind of felt like I wasn't meant to get the rocket when I did, or whatever, because it wasn't introduced to me properly.
I do agree, because it seems like they just sort of put the rocket in, at least when I found it, it seemed like it was just put in arbitrarily. Like, you could use it to get that particular shine that you were doing at that point, but you didn't have to. And I'd actually made it a fair bit harder for me, because I couldn't rely on the hover pack at that point, and I was up climbing scaffolding, but it was...
Yeah, and I understand why they can't...
That just made it weird.
I understand why they can't get rid of the one where you shoot water, but I really wish that I could maybe use a rocket and a hover together, because,
I'd like if I didn't... I was about to say I'd like if I could have, you know, all of them at the same time, but then that'd probably just make it too complicated, like, switching between four of them, you'd, you know, take too long to switch and then kill yourself.
Yeah, but, I mean, even if they did stack or something, that would be cool, like, you kind of, press a button to switch the nozzle... the normal nozzle backwards, and that would become the fan somehow, or the float. You could turn the hover into, I don't know, but it would... I understand what you mean, that would be kind of cool, but then I guess that would make it a little bit too easy.
Way too easy. I mean, it's just, it sort of ruins the fun if you've got everything you can do from the get go. It's nice to have these little secrets that you can sort of discover, and then it's just helps exploring.
And as well with the fact that they kind of... you can really discover those at any point in whichever level you happen to be doing. Because they're not introduced at any particular point, you don't keep them when you leave the level. Like, you go back out to the main hub, and I'm like, cool, I've got the rocket, I'll be able to go to that red box that I remember seeing in the main hub and access new areas. And it's still transparent in the main world until certain story parts happen. And that just seemed weird. I would have thought they'd... you know, wherever they introduce it would keep it as, cool, you've got this, now you can explore all those other levels like you never could before.
I think the last thing I really wanted to talk about was, you know, kind of the other companion in this game, which you might forget about, but Yoshi himself.
It was so cool.
Yeah, I think Yoshi really fits in with the theme. Like, you know, it's a tropical
definitely
island. I don't know, is he really that useful? I mean, I've only just...
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he feels really underutilized in this game. I really, I wrote this in my notes, I really like the idea that, you know, he eats fruit. And
And He'd be a different color depending on which fruit you gave him.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. Like, it's a really good way to implement him. But he really didn't feel used at all in this game.
Yeah,
like, it was kind of just thrown as a token. Here's Yoshi. Like,
you would have thought, you know, it would have been cool to have, you know, the whole egg throwing stuff that Yoshi does, or
that would be cool.
Or just any levels built around it, because none of the levels required it. He was just really a thing that made cool music happen, looked cool, and gave you a little bit.
I think just because the whole, like, Yoshi was huge back in the 90s. I mean, like, everything stemming from him and Super Mario World. And then when 64 came out, and he wasn't in 64 really, other than like a little cameo at the very end, I think people were sort of not a bit upset about that. So they wanted to have Yoshi in this game as playable.
It's kind of like, and then he wasn't really in Galaxy, was he? And then
Galaxy 2.
Came back for Galaxy 2.
Galaxy 2, yeah. I think this is probably one thing that stood out to me is a lot of people complain about modern games that introduce Yoshi and how he has the hover jump and he makes a stupid baby noise. And he didn't in this. It was like much more subtle, and I was like, oh, it's Yoshi, not like, oh, shut up.
And even Yoshi introduced to the character player like he... You know what I mean? It's just thrown in, like...
Yeah, it was just like, you come back from a level, it's like, oh, there's an egg, I wonder what that is.
We'll move on to enemy design and combat. We'll start off with the camera, because that's probably the worst thing about it all. Mm. I think that it's really bizarre how bad the camera is. It's just, it's really average. Sometimes I will just walk into a corner and start spazzing out. Like, I'm like, what have I done? Is my game broken?
And then you get that weird blue focus circle.
I had this.
Yeah, what's the circle? Does anyone know what the circle is? What's it meant to be?
No, it just seemed just to tell you. To me, it just sort of. It just seemed to be a thing. It's like, hey, the camera doesn't work here. Here's a little thing to, I don't know, look dumb and remind
it's
you.
It's just
that
bizarre.
The camera's not
I don't
working.
Know. I like. It's like I know the camera's not working. You have to constrict my view even more.
What's
with
the first
some
level?
Yeah.
What's the first level called?
Bianco Hills.
Yeah. So I was playing that, and I was doing the one where you had to get the 6 red coins, or the 8 red coins up near the windmills, and I was trying to jump off the big spot where Petey Piranha is originally, and I was trying to jump and then hover towards these sort of spring things. But every time I kept jumping, the camera would swing around and then completely ruin the angle of my jump. And
that's what I hate about the camera.
You're constantly fighting it.
Like, I feel like that maybe the hover was implemented as a way, because you can kind of save yourself with that sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, you suspend yourself and then kind of maneuver yourself, but so many times I still didn't. Like, the camera was just a mess.
I think you're right, it's kind of a safety net for your own issues, as well as potentially an admission that the camera is not perfect,
I mean,
so let's give you a way to make it not as frustrating.
As I said, like camera is always... If someone can make a 3D platform with a perfect camera control, one where... You have the ability to alter it, but you don't need to. It's sort of the holy grail for those games. I don't think anyone's ever really done it. Like, even Galaxy, which everyone loved, even the main complaints about that were, I wish I had more control over the camera.
So, enemies. The biggest thing that stood out to me, I don't know if this is obvious to you guys as well, was the game really had this over-reliance on the polluted piranha plants.
It really did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every
especially
battle was
in the outset, at least.
Yeah, like every battle was very similar. Like, they just changed the amount of hits you had to do, and
it's just like wait till his mouth opens and squirt him.
Yeah, and like that was kind of cool. But then I thought that, you know, it's very boring to have to go and open up a new world. I mean, to be fair, there's only what, like 6 or 7 of them. But it was just boring. Thought of a good idea. Like, I don't know if you guys agree with me, but like, for example, to unlock the Rico Harbor area, like, why not give us a battle with a polluted blooper or something?
Apart from just reusing.
Have
the same
each
thing.
World, like, kind of a familiar. Because, like, in this game, especially, all the enemies, there's hardly any enemies that are familiar. Like, there's. I don't think there's any Goombas. I don't think there's Koopa Troopers off the top of my head.
No.
Are you saying that Nintendo reuses Mario enemies repeatedly in a game? Like they would just use Renzor, like, 100 times?
Yeah, and how much do we like that guy?
Is you know, this game is all new and stuff, but why not just include subtle nods to the familiar with these polluted versions of the normal enemies? Like, I think that would have been just a cool way to do it, but instead of having the same battle 6 times in a row?
Well, I'm looking at the list of enemies game right now, and there's no... It's odd. It's like, it takes more influences from probably Mario Brothers 2, the US one, than with the normal Mario games.
Yeah, they all have sort of like weird out of left field designs, and like I think probably even more than using familiar ones and polluted forms, I think it just would have been more interesting if all the boss battles were just all new things that fit in with this area. Like Petey Piranha, as I say, where it goes too many times and doesn't really seem like a thing that fits here more than once.
But then on the other side of the coin, I think that the blooper battle was, I thought the blooper battle was a good one, because you know it kind of makes sense that a Squidward Rock end up, you know, kind of stranded or something near a harbour
and making ink everywhere,
and that makes sense to me. I mean, I think I really liked the way that, you know, you pulled the tentacle out to bring him out of the container, but then that's the way you beat him. Like, it was a really good way to kind of teach the player without telling them explicitly. The King Boo battle was a bit weird. I don't know if you guys found it or not, but
that was just an
obvious throwback to 64. But I liked the way the battle itself was different, even though it was a reused boss battle. And then there's the, I thought Petey Piranha was very boring. I thought the Manta Ray was horrible, like just so frustrating.
But I had to do that so many times that level. I just kept dying.
But I reckon it was a kind of a clever way to do it.
It was an interesting idea, but it was. I mean, this. I don't know if we're going to get to it, but this is a. It's not an easy game. I mean, you think Mario? Oh yeah, I can play that myself. And this is like, no, you can't. And
yeah,
that level.
I remember it being easier, but no, it's not. The only real thing that I really want to complain about is the final boss battle. I don't know if you guys got to it or if you remember
I remember liking it,
but I guess I'm not.
It's so anticlimactic. There's nothing to it. It's
like, basically, for anyone who doesn't know, you do all the stuff you need to do. You climb the top of the mountain, you find Peach, Bowser, Baby Bowser or Bowser Jr. in a giant
sludge bath.
Yeah, like a jacuzzi but in a volcano, I think. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, and then Bowser has terrible voice work, which we'll get to at the end, and that just removes the, you know, any tension or whatever from the battle, and it's just really boring. I don't know, it didn't feel big, and I kind of think to make the game feel big, you kind of need to have it culminate in a big battle.
And there really wasn't much to the battle. It was like, go around the circle and go the other way if he's breathing fire, and do a ground pound on these little targets, do that 5-6 times, and that's literally it. There's not like a, you know, another form or a separate fight that you have to do. It's just, oh, he fell out of the bath, we win.
And
now
and you know, everyone can sort of remember the final battle in Mario 64, like you grab Bowser by the tail and fling him, and I'm struggling to remember this battle. I remember liking it at the time.
Yeah, no.
You were probably just happy that you're finishing the game.
The game was bad.
I'm sure I finished that.
Oh, no, not like that. Just like, I'm beating a game.
Yeah, but yeah, I thought that was a really bad, like, I think it's probably one of the least memorable Bowser boss battles in the entire series. I don't know. I can't even remember others.
I kind of agree.
Yeah, and then, you know, once the game's done, there's a bit to do, but I do question whether or not, you know, it's worth it. The mini games themselves, I thought, were really, really unenjoyable. I don't know if you guys got to
throw
fruit in the basket and stuff.
Grab six, you know, you have to soccer kick 6 durians from the other side of the island.
It's just, I was not a fan of them. The worst thing, though, is, you know, I think that how many shines a large majority of the shines are reserved for the blue coins, which means you've got to get 10 blue coins, trade them in at a shop, and she gives you the lady thing, gives you a shine. Yeah, so, you know,
how screwed up is that? This whole island's like suffering in darkness. And like, no, we're not going to give you these.
Yeah, and there's some bitch in the jetty hoarding the shines. Like,
screw her.
Hand it over. But I mean, I didn't. The most annoying thing with the blue coins to me was the game had to save every single time you picked one up. We didn't have to, but you know.
But it came up with the interrupting prompts,
which was just annoying. And then, like, you know, I did. Well, I'll be honest, I didn't get all of them. I couldn't be bothered.
I think the worst part about the blue coins is it had no way of tracking which ones you'd had and which ones you didn't. A lot of people just avoided blue coins entirely so that they could go through at the end of the game and collect them up, because once you've collected a mishmash of them throughout the game and, you know, you're using a guide or whatever to try and find the rest, it's impossible to know which ones you've got and which you don't if you don't have a photographic memory.
Yeah, and I mean, if you collect everything, you do get a completion bonus. Are you guys aware of what it is? I had to look it up. It's pretty average.
What was it?
You get a different ending screen, which is like a photograph of the cast, and you get a Hawaiian shirt and aviator sunglasses for Mario.
Oh, God, yes!
I'm pretty sure you get the sunglasses anyway if you beat Bowser, but the shirt is exclusive to all 120.
Oh, okay, yeah. And, you know,
but that said, it's that doesn't really sound worth it, but was it really worth it to see Yoshi on the roof, either?
Yeah, that's true.
I never cared about that.
I mean, to give you a quick idea, like 50 shine sprites are required to advance to Corona Mountain, which is where the game ends. There's 120 in the game all up, so basically you need less than 50% to get through the game. I don't know, to me that number's off. I feel like maybe you should at least have to get...
I mean, you know, you look
is that
at Galaxy,
what it usually is?
You look at Galaxy...
I think that's pretty close. Like, I remember finishing Galaxy on under 60, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, is all that work worth it in the end?
It's to get 100%? It's what Nintendo does now. Well, now it's like here's... You only need these to finish the easy game, and then if you want to finish the real game, you need everything.
I mean, the thing it reminds me most of is
when you
collect... I think
it's more about the journey than the destination.
I think that it reminds me most of is, you know, when you collect the millions of coins in Super Mario Bros. 2, new Super Mario Bros. 2, and you get a new title screen. It's like, wow.
Well, I think this is a bit better because it's more than just playing levels over and over to get coins. You've got, you know, you have the completionist in you. It's like, I've got to get all the objectives, all the things, whereas... New Super Mario Bros. 2 could just literally be sit at a thing and get a million coins forever.
And I suppose the blue coins themselves, they kind of, well, they're located in places that challenge the player from both platforming and a flood perspective. So they're not that bad, I guess. So as usual, we ended on a blank note, so we will go to a quick break and we'll come back to talk about the game's presentation. And we're back, so we've talked about the game, you know, the game's development history and its game design, so we'll get into the more superficial side of things and talk about its presentation, which includes, you know, the visuals, the audio, and the writing. So visuals, first up. The thing that most stands out for Super Mario Sunshine for me would be that all the levels are pretty similar, but to the point where they kind of establish one giant setting rather than all existing in separate vacuums, like in Galaxy. Mm. Well, Galaxy kind of works, but more so in 64, where, you know, there was, you know, where is Bob-omb Battlefield located in relation to, I was going to say Jolly Roger Bay, but that's not the question I'm asking. That's Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
The other one.
You can actually see,
Die Die Docks.
You know how, like, we're saying you can see the levels and all that, but you know how, like, you can see the theme park from one of the levels, or you can see the docks from another level.
Yeah, that's what I think is really cool, and it kind of... It
just makes it all seem like that one consistent setting that we were touching on earlier. It's really... It just makes it feel like a place instead of video game level.
Playing this, it's like I would like if they just could have potentially done a huge interconnected world, just like a big open world. Sort of Mario.
Weren't we complaining about the levels being too big?
Yeah,
earlier?
I know, but I mean, they were too big, but then I'm like, but if they could have just done it all as one huge open world Mario.
You're just like one of those fans who, the Zelda fans, who they want a cel shaded, they want an Ocarina of Time, and then they don't want to know what they want.
Either. I know what I want, what I really, really want.
Until you get it, and then you don't want it anymore.
I mean, I think this is better than it. I like this approach to level design because it's, you know, it's a little bit different to a game like, say, I've written 3D World here as an example, where the environments are there, but they kind of just exist as a purpose to be a level. Like, they're not really a world. Mm. Like, I can imagine when Mario's not there, what the people on that island would be doing and living, do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah, they'd be walking around going, boo-loo-loo-boo-hoo.
Yeah, and
that's it.
That's at least something. It's not a very fulfilling existence, but it's an existence regardless.
This this goes back to what I said, like, with Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze and, like, the difference between that and New Super Mario Bros. U. New Super Mario Bros. U is just these abstract levels, don't really have anything to do with the previous one. Whereas Tropical Freeze, each level sort of set in this sort of island, and the themes continue on, and it feels like a living, breathing world. Whereas Mario is just it's a bunch of static levels, and this feels like a living, breathing world.
Yeah, for sure. And that's. But do you guys like this approach better than what was offered in Mario 64?
Like, I like
do you think
both,
that?
I mean, it's good.
Like, just... I prefer Mario 64 because it's more of a variety. Like, I really do need variety. I know it sounds like I've got ADHD or something, but I really need to have variety to kind of keep me interested. And I mean,
yeah,
I
did
guys,
find that on my...
that you had trouble finishing it a second time before this episode.
Yeah, my recent playthrough, I found it not quite as engaging just because... I mean, there was a lot of variety, mind you. Like, you had, you know, a beach, you had a harbour, you had that...
hotel.
One that was... Yeah, the hotel. Oh, that was an interesting level.
The bay.
There was another one that was sort of, like, set in a grassy setting with fires and flaming chain chomps and stuff, which was, you know, different, but... Yeah, I do know what you mean. It's they did a pretty good job of making interesting levels out of the setting limitations that they forced on themselves, but yeah, it does make things seem a little bit limited overall.
I was saying to Flame before this episode, like, did they do this because, you know, they had the, like, the GameCube discs could only hold 1.5 gigs, and that wasn't a lot. So maybe they did this because they could reuse assets a lot, because the worlds are pretty samey. But,
I mean,
sorry. Maybe.
I don't know, it's just a thought.
But,
we will never know.
But why, you say, which do you prefer, the open, like the abstract level sort of usual design or this? And I'm like, well, why can't we have both kinds of Mario games? I mean,
well, the first
thing
that.
Just actually on this note.
Like having an interconnected world that kind of attempts to feel connected was Other M, where. It was all connected, but the environment still existed in a vacuum, but they made sense from a story perspective for existing in a vacuum.
Well, that's
but
the same
didn't...
as Fusion, I guess.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I like that. But, I mean, obviously it's not the same, but they, I don't know what they could do with Mario to do something like that, but...
I think I was actually reading the some of the developers did a very short interview, and one of the questions was about their the story production and the world that they made, and they said they wanted it to feel like a more real world than Mario 64, something more relatable. So, like, you see Mario jumping down from the height of a 3-story building instead of just jumping over a arbitrarily sized block that you can't relate to. It all just grounds things in reality a little bit.
Yeah. And then the most obvious, like, component that makes up the game world would be water. I think, I don't know about the water, like, I kind of, at first I was like, this looks really great, like, it makes me really thirsty, it's, like, you know, it's,
yes.
it's a
I want Yoshi's juice.
Yeah, it's a good, like,
that sounds
portrayal
dirty.
Of water, but then...
That sounds really dirty.
Get your minds out of the gutter, children. But, I don't know, I thought the water effects were quite good, but...
Oh, they really were. I was blown away by them.
I don't know if they hold up. Like, I think of, like, to me, when I think of best water from that generation, I think of Star Fox Adventures, but...
Wave Race. I mean, sort of a thing that was, you know...
Yeah, I was impressed by Wave Race on GameCube as well. I think this did a pretty good job of, like, because it's a very stylized world, the water didn't look out of place, like, overly realistic. It sort of fit in.
But to me, the water was more or less just, like, they kind of applied, like, a clear texture over the top of something. Like, it didn't feel like the water had weight. I don't know how to explain
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think,
like,
they actually changed the, how you actually navigate water as well. A lot of people thought that was a step back from Mario 64, where you, like, had a button to go up, a button to go down, whereas 64 was a fair bit more... You know, you'd look at your direction and go there, so it made the water feel a bit more substantial, where this, it just felt like, I don't know, going through jelly.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I don't know how
if
to
anyone
explain
agrees.
It, but it
I remember seeing
good.
something during the making of, like, Finding Nemo. They said one of the hardest things of animating water is water doesn't really look like it's there. I mean, you sort of have to try and animate stuff around water to show that water's a thing.
Mm.
I understand what they mean by that. Like, but then I think, you know, you kind of... You do, because, like, if you, for example, if we go to the beach right now and put our heads under with, like, a pair of goggles on, you still can, I mean, I suppose you're not seeing the water, you're seeing the sand and the, and the seaweed
and
whatever.
You're seeing everything adjusted by the water.
You're seeing the effect water has on everything.
I know what
else.
They mean, for sure. And, I mean, this was 2002, so you can't really expect too much. But then when was Finding Nemo released?
About then.
I don't know.
Well, that's sure. That was also on supercomputers.
Yeah. Well, let's not compare them.
But I mean, like, getting back to, like, Wave Race and sort of like that sort of set the precedent for how water should look. I mean, I don't know if it was Wave Race 64 or Wave Race GameCube, where, like, everyone's like, "Wow, these are the best, the bee's knees of water physics." And how it looks, but...
I think they probably
put a bit more effort into the physics simulation of water in those games, and it was less important in this. It was more just a setting thing rather than an actual game mechanic itself.
I mean, there was a level where you were in the bottle, but...
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Do you guys think the game holds up in terms of graphically?
Yes.
Graphically, I do think so. Like, nothing looks bad. It doesn't look as oddly perfect as Mario 3D World does, but it's still far from looking bad.
There's a lot of holy stretch textures in some spots, but other than that, it looks... I mean, you know, it's that they've done a very good job of hiding just how low poly some of stuff is. I mean, like, that's always been Nintendo's strong suit. It's always been about a very good art style hiding the limitations of the hardware. I mean, I was asking you guys before, does this kind of cell shading? Stephen, you're saying no, it's not cell shaded, but it's sort of like a different. Well, it's.
I didn't know this was ever considered cell shaded.
I think it actually is. I wish I didn't say it wasn't, because I sort of looked at some of the late game stuff, and especially in the cutscenes, it's not like as extreme as Beautiful Joe or Wind Waker, but it's definitely got a subtle cell shading or similar sort of shader over it.
I mean, simple things like when you sort of just see the way shadows just sort of like it's very two tone shadows. And,
It has a lot of bold colors, and it doesn't have as much gradients as it does.
I wanted to play some Galaxy before we did this episode, just to sort of see how they compare. But I'm like, other than the fact that Mario has short sleeves,
lucky enough. I could play it in progressive scan because I've got a US copy with a freeloader.
Oh, lucky you!
Well, back in the day, I used a freeloader. Today, I used the USB loader, but looks great. I was surprised. I thought it would look really bad. I kind of forgot, you know, how.
No, I always remember being pretty impressed with it, and I was still, you know, for its time, I still think it's pretty good. It does. It's far from looking bad.
Other than those cutscenes, it looks great.
Speaking of the cutscenes, we will move on to audio. This is probably this is the first Mario game where there's been voice work. I mean, I know at the beginning of Super Mario 64, Peach does her little letter. Beginning.
Yeah, it's the first one with anything substantial.
Also, Luigi's Mansion, we've had a lot of voice acting.
No, hardly any.
Oh, really?
It just had, like, random mumbles and Mario. Screams. Mario. Yeah, one word.
I guess it would have had the rare talk.
It was all text-based.
And it would have had, like, the rare talk thing.
I think with the voice acting, it's not very good.
It seems unnecessary, like, especially when I was with the final boss battle. You've got Bowser, he does I'm Bowser, big scary man, and then he, like, segues into his rah, like, really guttural roar, and it just doesn't seem like it's coming from
really
the same
cheap.
Thing.
Like, it just makes it cheap.
Yeah, it just seems like a dodgy, cheapy budget thing compared to the rest of the game's huge production values.
And I found it funny that, you know, this is the first game where there's a lot of voice work, and Mario doesn't speak still. Like, I understand why.
But Mario's always sort of been a very silent...
Yeah, I agree. Person. Like, it's kind of like making Link talk, and I don't think that'll... Maybe it will happen, but I don't think it will.
But then it's not like Mario...
Yeah, it does seem that the...
You know, like the cartoons and all that. Mario was always presented as a character that could speak and all that, but then, especially once you got to sort of the 64 and onwards, like even the Mario RPGs, he never talks. And when
no, he just sort of like reacts to the world happening around him.
Yeah, and even when Luigi and Mario are talking in the Mario and Luigi games, like, and then everyone else talks normally around him.
Yeah.
It's very weird. I mean, I don't know.
It is.
I mean, I don't know if I want voice work for Mario, though, because, like, I mean, we could get... Imagine if we got, like, Troy Baker voicing Mario. It would just be like...
Charles Martinet does, like, a whole movie just in that voice.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just think the voice work is really off here for some reason. It just doesn't feel right.
I think it's just because Mario is such a blank slate character that he really always has just been a vehicle for a game mechanic. He's never really been a character.
Oh, no, but I'm talking about, like, anything. Peach and Toads,
you know what? I'm
going to
say,
and Bowser.
It's not just the voice acting. It's what they have to work with is appalling.
That's true.
It's, you know, a good voice actor can only do so much, but if they have got one of the most stupid scripts to work with, it's just like, you get away from my mama. My dad said you're a bully, and I'm not going to fall for your tricks like he does. You leave my mama alone.
That would just be like a regular Saturday morning cartoon, though.
No, oh god, it's worse. I don't know.
That would be like the worst Saturday morning cartoon.
I was just sitting there like, shut up, stop talking, just let me jump on shit's head.
Just let me shoot water missiles at you.
I don't care.
But yeah,
that was a kind of cool boss battle.
Enough with the voice, but we'll move on to the music. I really like the music.
Yes. I think it's among my favorite Mario soundtracks.
Yeah, it really captures the tropical island the setting perfectly.
I'm noticing a theme of the things that we like about this game.
The setting.
And it's mostly the setting.
It's
not the setting.
I remember everyone said what they loved about with Galaxy was it had this sweeping orchestral soundtrack. And that, I mean, it worked for those games, but then like with 3D World and this, I sort of realised I like it when Mario does the more jazzy sort of style more because it suits it, and this has them.
I really liked when, you know, you jump on Yoshi and it would change the music to be more of a percussion-y.
It added an extra layer of like percussion in the background. It was a nice little callback to Yoshi Mario World.
Well, it had this sort of jungle theme going.
But even the music told a story, like the like if you were on the harbour level especially, like that's a very busy kind of working kind of song. Do you know what I mean? Like it's hard to explain.
Yeah, everything really, it is really hard to explain. But yeah, just sort of, you know, you'd be able to get just the music by itself, and you could kind of, if you took a picture of the, like if you heard the main theme and were picturing what that music accompanied, you probably would picture an idyllic tropical island city thing. And it seems like all the music could... It does, yeah. It tells a story and describes its area without actually having to say anything.
But yeah, I mean, the voice works really bad, but the soundtrack and stuff is really good. So, I guess...
So they listen to the soundtrack.
They almost balance themselves out, so... Which is good.
And the voice acting is very, you know, here and there. It's not a common thing, so you don't have to deal with it all that much.
I mean, in terms of the way that the game is written as well, I mean, I want to just quickly talk about Flood again. But from a story perspective, is he, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but is he the first companion character for Mario?
Unless you count Yoshi, would be.
I mean, I don't, because, I mean, in 64 you had Lakitu following you. He didn't really do anything, did he, other than go...
Yeah, that was just like a justification for a camera. No, he was literally just the camera.
Because Flood sometimes gives you hints, but they're very pointless.
Mario.
I mean, I feel like, and I mentioned this in my notes, I think that Flood feels like a much better way for you to do a robotic companion than someone like Fee or Fi. Is it Fee or Fi? Do we know? Do we know if it's Fee?
Well, I think that Flood rarely ever stops you from playing while it's explaining anything. It's just talks over the gameplay, and that's like unlike Fee or Fi or Fo or Fum, who stops the game and stops the whole like flow of everything. This just lets you play and learn as you do it.
But you prefer her over Flood.
I actually probably a lot of why I like Fee is also the story they gave her.
She was the sword.
Well, no, just
oh, well, she was the Flood. Soul. Yeah.
Flood's a talking robot made by Dr. Egad.
Don't you reckon it was sad at the end?
What, Flood or Fee?
Flood.
I can't remember what happened at the end.
Oh, it's Flood kind of. Did Flood actually die, or was that just? I can't remember.
He kind of deactivated.
He kind of like fell down.
It's a little bit sad. It's really sad, I reckon. His voice is so... Anyway, yeah, I mean, I've written this down. It's a bit of a wrong place to say it, but I'd say that the game is very cinematic in its presentation. You know, there's pre-boss battle cutscenes. The segues into the other scenes are framed in letterbox formatting, so there's obviously an obvious cinematic kind of...
Callback to cinema.
Yeah, lots of...
I think that was... It was very much the trend at the time. Everything was, oh, we finally have the technology to accurately, photorealistically do cinematic video games, and everything had to do it at that point.
Yeah.
I think we've still got games that very much try and do that, but I think we've more found a bit of a found out where it's appropriate now, whereas before we just chucked it everywhere.
As I said, like with other platformers at the time, Mario Sunshine was very much a product of what was going on at that time, and like platformers needed a story. You couldn't just have a game that existed for the reason of you know, having fun
to play the game.
Yeah, but like early 2000s, like the medium had grown up really quickly during the PlayStation era, and you had stuff like Final Fantasy VII, which is like, no, everything has to have a story now. There has to be a reason for us to do this. It can't just be fun for the sake of fun. And that affected a lot of like platformers and even fighting games. All of that needed a deep, engrossing story to draw you in. You can't just be beating the crap out of each other.
Deep and engrossing in quotation marks.
Yeah, but I mean, so they apply that to Mario, and it's like, you know, on one hand, I wish they had enough, because the storyline in this game really just makes you cringe. On the other hand, I'm like, oh, well, no, I do like they sort of went with this tropical storyline, because if they hadn't had to do a story based around it. I don't think they would have done the tropical setting. They just would have made Mario 64 Part 2.
The part that I wanted to... I just wanted to close off this section. I just really want to talk about the island. I mean, I don't know, this might be a bit of a wrong comparison. It kind of reminded me of Majora's Mask, where it threw a character into a world that's very different. But then Majora's Mask was still quite familiar, because, you know, it was the same characters and stuff. Whereas the Delfino Plaza or Delfino Isle is very, like, as we said before, there's no enemies, or, like, you know, recognizable.
It's really, really interesting that you mention... It's interesting that you mentioned Majora's Mask, because in that interview I mentioned before, they actually talk about how some of the ideas that they preliminarily had for Majora's Mask that didn't end up making it into it actually sort of became the basis for some things in Super Mario Sunshine,
like
a lot of the bosses.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah, they don't give specific examples apart from, like, a lot of the bosses sort of used similar mechanics and stuff like that, just general ideas that they had were supposedly from Majora's Mask, which I found interesting.
Sorry to interrupt, James. Just what you're saying about with the whole different setting but same characters. I mean, I think the thing with Majora's Mask is it's not that it's a different setting. It's just that it's a very similar setting, but everything's off-kilter enough to make it very...
Eerie?
Yeah, very eerie.
Just off...
off-putting.
Just something's not...
Yeah, right. like you know, like... You look like someone I know,
can't
but you're
finger
not,
on it.
And that freaks me out. But with Sunshine, it's just Mario in a different setting. It's not like this doesn't look like the Mushroom Kingdom. There aren't, you know, pipes and toadstools everywhere to remind you that, you know, there aren't clouds with smiles on them. So I don't know. It's just a different setting for a Mario game. It's a bit like going from Mario Brothers 3 to Mario World, I guess, where Mario World doesn't look like the Mushroom Kingdom. It looks like this tropical, this sort of dinosaur island.
Yeah, well, I agree wholeheartedly. But, and with that, we'll quickly close off that section and we'll move on to... this is just something I thought I would do, because I noticed that I watched a lot of old trailers for this game and I noticed a lot changed, so I thought maybe we could have a little bit of a thing where we talk about what was intended for the game and what happened in the end. So basically beta elements, so stuff that was in the game originally but then got taken out for whatever reason. The first thing that really piqued my interest was Mario could actually collect what they called Sol coins, so S-O-L, presumably because that's the Mexican or Spanish word for sun.
Yeah.
And they could be...
Because Mario is a spice of life.
Yeah. And they could be exchanged to ride a train around the plaza. I assume they decided to take this out and replace it with those sewer grate things.
Yeah, that actually would make sense. It was just an alternative method of getting around.
And I mean, I would say a train would be kind of boring. Like, if you had to... Because they could either do it two ways. They could do it where Mario rides his way across levels and you have to wait. Or they do it where you have to... like quit out, not quit out, but you know, you'd have to load out and
just like
in.
Fade to black and come back.
Yeah, so I don't know, that would maybe be too jarring, so maybe that's why they took it out.
To me, a train really doesn't suit the setting. Where would it, like, obviously probably the world was a bit different at that point, but it just seems weird for a tropical setting and a train, and it wasn't even that big.
Yeah,
I guess a minute to get from
one
side to the other.
I guess the island was meant to be bigger. Maybe.
I mean, that's the other thing I was about to get to is, you know, the original game kind of, if you look at the original reveal trailer, it looks like a much more, like, built-up kind of suburban paradise, if that makes sense. Like, and
yeah.
there were even human people on the island, so maybe it was going to be, I don't know. The biggest thing that changed was there was actually a giant monster who was roaming the plaza, and he could spawn enemies himself. He was called...
Somewhat of a nemesis.
Yeah, like, it was really bizarre. It was really bizarre looking. Have you guys seen the photo?
No, I've actually not seen... Oh, I'm looking at the photo.
Oh, yeah.
Looks a bit like,
it looks like a
the
giant. Yeah, it looks like a giant.
Well, I mean, there's lots of little... There's little versions of him that are regular enemies.
Yeah, so I guess they kind of got rid of that. Maybe that was planned for when the world would be bigger, so maybe he wasn't as annoying. But that was kind of... I think that would have been cool. Like, maybe they could have parts where, you know, you'd have to quickly rush out of one of the levels and come back to the city to save it from this thing that keeps spreading shit everywhere. Or maybe that was what they planned to have as, like, a villain that kind of spread the pollution around before they decided on Mario. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. That's just random. That's why I love this stuff, because you can kind of try to fill in the gaps.
I like how there's, like, looking at that picture, there's electricity poles and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of goes back to that suburban...
Originally, Flood was going to be a companion character, but the team couldn't figure out how to implement his watering function, so they made him a robot tool instead. I think that was a...
Sort of on the on Flood and him being a robot tool, I actually found some details, once again, in that interview, that there were a couple of nozzles they actually had to cut from the game. And they said that there were some preliminary gun-type water nozzles that couldn't be used because of the controversy in the United States around the early 2000s. So I found that really interesting.
I keep trying to bring guns into Mario. Like, if you heard about the original yeah, the original Mario Brothers game, instead of fireballs, it was meant to have a gun. And it's like, what
that's
the hell?
It's out of place.
Let's just Shadow the Hedgehog Mario.
Guns sell now, unfortunately.
Shadow the Hedgehog.
But
we should do that for one of these.
I do believe, like, just reading over all this stuff now, that this game used to take place in a city of some sort.
Yeah.
A European city.
Yeah, even on the disc they fit, you can find a soccer ball in a box, and they were eventually converted into fruit and basket. I mean, to me, a soccer ball in a box labeled goal would have been, you know, a kind of a good diversion to have in a city. But then in a tropical setting, you would have fruit and baskets. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of weird how this stuff matches up.
I did find it really weird how the durians behave so much like a soccer ball when you walk around kicking them around. It's like, that's not what a durian does. I don't
know. No, it isn't. Doesn't behave. But, I think a tropical setting was a much more interesting choice than a suburban setting, for sure.
As I said before, I wouldn't mind sort of like an open world Mario. And just sort of thinking about that, that's something that they've not really done with Mario. And I'm all for them trying new ideas.
I think this suburban setting kind of seems like the gritty reboot before gritty reboots were a thing.
Yeah, well, then they rebooted the reboot to a tropical island because they were like, no, this is too gritty. But like stuff, you know, like Flame, you said there were power cables and stuff. I guess that was repurposed into some of the other levels because jump over the sparks and stuff.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I thought was really interesting was, did you guys ever, you would have come across Il Piantissimo, the little purple guy that you race in the game?
The running man.
Yeah. In the original, like on the disc, that they kind of, the guys who hacked it, I don't know who, took off his helmet, and underneath it was the running man from Ocarina of Time. So I don't know if they originally planned for that to be a reveal, or if they planned for them to be in the same world, but that was kind of a thing that was a thing at some
point. Sort of funny that they didn't go with the... Just in 64, they had that Koopa that you would... Was it a Koopa you'd get in races?
The little bunny rabbit?
No, wasn't there a Koopa?
There was a bunny rabbit you caught in the overworld. Yeah, there was. That, like, Koopa that just... you'd race him to the top of the hill.
But, I mean, you know, maybe Mario and Zelda are actually the real... the same universe. The same as our Kid Icarus and Metroid are in the same universe.
Well, I mean, that kind of implies that they were at some point, but then they decided, nah, let's not do this. It's a bit silly. I mean, it kind of is. I don't think I'd be happy
with
that.
Well, I mean, he is... Maybe he just put on a mask so he wouldn't be recognised in Isle Delfino.
Or maybe, you know, it's like Smash Brothers is sort of this dimensional hub and they can sort of keep crossing between dimensions. And maybe it's just Mario video games. Who cares?
Maybe just video games. Okay. And with that, we will go to a quick break and then we'll return to wrap up the episode. There's nothing new on the site at the moment. It's a very, very quiet time, so... Yeah.
Hence why we're doing critiques.
Yeah, that's why we do these. And we're basically... We will be returning on the 23rd of April, I believe, to do another critique, so that's one to look out for. We will, as usual, we will tease which game it is, and I'll insert a snippet here to let you... see if you can guess which one it is. And the next episode will be on the 26th of March, and that one will be for basically all centered around New Yoshi's Island, so it'll be a more traditional format, and we will basically just be talking about that game and going over the latest news that we missed out on. So yeah, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes as well with any constructive feedback. I would especially like to call out everyone who's left any comment or feedback. We really appreciate it. We have tried to take it on board, especially with this episode because we kind of went for a more positive game, whereas we were more negative on Other M as well. So yeah, we will see you in a fortnight's time for a traditional episode. And we will have a critique episode on the 23rd of April for you as well. So, yeah, thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll see you again. Bye.
Goodbye. Dum 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 d